guy just tears hell out of you telling you who you are, doesn't he? I guess I can start trusting him now. I didn't know what he was going to say when he got up here. He threatened a lot of things. Thank you, Clarence. I assure you that's a two-way feeling. My name is Jim Hyers, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. I guess some of you might be wondering why I would be so humble as to schedule myself on this program. Well, I'll tell you how it happened. Oh, a year or so ago, one member of the board casually suggested that maybe I should try to get up here and talk sometime. And I immediately rationalized that into thinking that the board of trustees had had a secret meeting without me and had voted unanimously to request that I get up here and speak. I know what a difficult spot it is to be standing here for even the first, the last, the middle meeting of Mont Eagle. And I don't know why I was stupid enough to put me in this spot this morning. But here I am. Most of you have heard my story. It hasn't changed, thank God. It's kind of like the guy who's a member of the Rotary Club. He's been a member of this club for about 25 years. And he's held every office that could be. Done an excellent job and never missed a single meeting. And other members of this Rotary Club thought an awful lot of this old guy. So they decided one time to take up collection and send him on a trip as an indication of their gratitude. So they took up this purse and sent him to Europe for a few weeks. He supposed to have been gone 4 weeks, but all of a sudden, 2 weeks early, he came back. And it was the day of a Rotary meeting, and he showed up. They didn't expect him. But they wanted him to tell the rest of the members of his trip over in Europe what he saw and what he felt, so forth. So they asked him this time if he'd do that. He said, yeah, I'd be glad to. But they had a rule in this particular Rotary Club that they only could talk 20 minutes. That's all anybody could talk. Old Joe got up and started talking about his travels in England and other places in Europe. And his 20 minutes was almost up. About 15 minutes had passed and he hadn't gotten out of England. And somebody said, Joe, tell us about France and Paris. Did you go there? What did you see? He said, well, boys, tell you the truth, I did make a short visit to Paris. Well, tell us about it. All these stories we've been hearing about the girls in Paris, tell us something. He said, well, one day I was walking down the street there in Paris and passed one of these little sidewalk cafes and decided to sit out and have myself a drink. I sat at a table by myself, and a few minutes a lady came up and said, do you mind if I join you? I said, of course not. Have a seat. Boy, you've never seen anything so beautiful in your life. Nowhere in Chicago, Miami, or Los Angeles has been anything as beautiful as she was. So she sat down, and we engaged in conversation and had a bought her a drink. And she mentioned, she said, would you like to go up to my apartment? I said, of course I will. Said, we can have a drink up there. So we went up to her apartment. I said, boy, you've never seen such a beautiful apartment in your life. Nothing like it in Miami, Chicago, or Los Angeles. We sat down and talked for a few minutes, and she said to you, would you excuse me while I go get into something more comfortable? And I said, please do. She went in, and a few minutes she came out, and she had long blonde hair, and she had let that down, and she had on all these thin jobs they wear over there. And she stood there at her bedroom door, and boy, I've never seen anything more beautiful in my life. I bet you couldn't find anything that pretty in Miami, Chicago, or Los Angeles. So she came over, she sat down by me, and we had a drink, and we started talking. By that time, John banged on the table and said, "Time's up, Joe. You got to sit down." Joe sat down, and they immediately had a board of directors meeting like we did this morning. And they changed that rule in about 20 minutes, effective right then. When they finished, they said, "Joe, we want you to go ahead and tell you the rest of your story, especially the Paris part." He said, "Boys, I'm awfully sorry you changed that rule, because it's meant an awful lot to me over these years. Especially my sorry you changed it this morning, because from then on, after she sat down by me and we had that drink, it was the same as it would have been in Miami, Chicago, or Los Angeles." Actually, I like to think that maybe I have changed a little bit since I came to this program. Since perhaps the first talk I made, I hope I'm a little different this morning than I was then. Even if I made one to some of you yesterday, I hope that I have changed or grown a little bit today. Because I'm one of those that believe unless we grow in AA, we get drunk. We can't reach a plateau and just stay there. We've got to progress a little bit each day, I believe. Although my drinking story hasn't changed, my philosophy of life and of Alcoholics Anonymous and you, I hope, has made some improvement. It's a real privilege to try here to stand this morning and share my experience with you. Something I dreamed of for 14 roundups, to tell you the truth. I guess maybe I feel like the Episcopal priest that dreamed he was addressing the House of Bishops. And woke up, and sure enough, he was. One difficult part of being in this tail end of the program is all the words of wisdom and advice that you had planned to say this morning has already been said. Coral Louise and Juanita and Dick stole everything I had to tell you. They've already shared it with you. It's kind of like being a pinch hit on a baseball game, being called to bat in the ninth inning when your team is leading about 20 runs and the game's already won. What can I add to what has already been said? But I will try to share a little bit of you with you of what AA means to me. What you mean to me. Perhaps a little bit about what Mont Eagle means to me. I think when I said I'm an alcoholic, you know my story. I will tell you that I took the first drink at age 13 because I couldn't get along with you, with me. I couldn't face life or the world or the circumstances, and I needed a crutch. I took my last drink 25 years later for the same reason. And then I found you. A few weeks ago, I was starting to read a book entitled Journey Inward, Journey Outward. And about the second or third page, I ran across a quotation from the Bible, a passage of Scripture. It went something like this. The gate to life is small, the road is narrow, and those who make it are few. I think it's from the book of Matthew. Check me on that, Father. And that's as far as I got in that book. I put it down and I haven't opened it since. Because how true that is of you and me, especially this alcoholic. The gate to life is small. And I remember the times that I approached that gate with the help of loved ones and even members of Alcoholics Anonymous. When they tried to get me to open this gate, because nobody could do it for me, I had to do it myself. Open this gate and get on the road to life and be a part of the human race again. But all the times that I got to this gate, it seemed like I had reasons or excuses not to do it. The reason that excuses weren't acceptable to you, no. But I still had a reason or excuse to take another drink. And to turn down your offer of a life of sobriety and love and understanding. And I made many trips to this gate before I ever got up the courage and strength to reach out to the latch and open it. I like to call it the AA gate. I guess it was back in April of 1951 that I opened that gate. 2 years prior to that, I've been to it many times in AA meetings. But always I was waiting for somebody on the other side of the gate to open it for me. Life's not that way. Then I got on this narrow road. This time I think honestly searching for this AA way of life that I'd heard you talk about. And for this alcoholic, this road is very narrow at times. And for the past 17 and a half years, I've been traveling on this narrow road. Many times stumbling and almost falling. Creating obstacles and problems for myself. And every time that I almost fell or got off the road, you were there. It seems to me this morning here, standing on top of the mountain, Mount Eagle, that this narrow road to AA life is lined with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of them is standing there waiting so they can help me. Nobody else. I'm the only one they're there for, seems like. Past few years, this AA trip on this narrow road has been very pleasant and smooth. The rough times I've had since I've been in AA have been caused by me. My stubborn, obstinate, doubting self, I guess you'd say. But it must have been about 7.5 years ago. Now, let me get off the subject here just a minute. Those of you who were here last year, or last May, remember we had a monsoon up here on Sunday morning. We're having one outside this morning, and I hope I don't make it a double one here, but I'm a sentimental son of a gun. And if I get carried away with my feelings, I hope you'll understand. Because this is a serious thing, this AA living, this AA program. Life is serious. And every bit of it means so very much to me now, so if I get a little bit blubbery, please try to understand. But I guess it was sometime after this trip that Clarence was talking about a while ago from coming from Blackstone. When he and Ed and myself were privileged to be available when God decided that perhaps there should be an AA roundup here at Mount Eagle. And reached down and got us as his trusted servants to try and carry out his will. So that all of us might grow a little bit more in His grace. And it seems like this narrow road that I've been traveling and stumbling on and falling down and getting up with your help began to get smooth and straight and wide all the time. And I wasn't having the problems that I'd been having before. Because I think the first time we came to the top of the mountain in May of 1962, I unconsciously, but thank God I did, put my life in your hands. I kind of turned loose and let go and let God. And the members of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me do the things that I've been trying to do for myself for so long. I kind of got out of the way of God's will. I guess maybe I was really practicing the third step then. kind of like Monita, I start off the day with very good intentions, and then about 9 o'clock in the morning, I kind of take them back. Because God's not doing a very good job to me sometimes, I think. But along about that time, back in 1962, I began to get comfortable with Jim Hires. And all my life, I'd been uncomfortable around me. I think the last 3 or 4 years of my drinking was because I couldn't stand me. That was one of the excuses. Because I was a pretty despicable character in every department of living. And I knew it. I knew it better than anybody else. And knowing me as well as I did, I tried to get me out of the way. And my only answer then was oblivion through the bottle. If you don't believe me, ask Evelyn. I really practiced that. I went to any length to get what I needed to get me out of the way. But I'm trying to get out of the way of God's will now. And I put my life in your hands. And I've been trying to do what you have been telling me for so long, but I didn't hear. As I said before, this road has gotten straight. It's still narrow, and I hope it always stays that way. But it's smooth and it's comfortable, and there's a gradual incline of this road. Because if I think if we, you and I, stay on this AA road, it always leads upward to what we don't know, but we don't care because it's good, whatever it is. For the past 7.5 years since I've been coming here to top of the mountain with you people, it seems that because of my efforts to try and travel this road a little better and more diligently, that because of you and God as I understand Him, and because of the privilege of serving as His trusted servant, that all of a sudden I found myself rocketed in the fourth dimension of living, of which I'd never dreamed. And I have tasted much of heaven since I've been here. I think it was Cora Louise and Dick last night that made reference to why you and I were selected for this gift of sobriety. I don't know why either. There are 6 to 10 million, and I prefer to call it 10 million, who are outside in the cold and the darkness and waiting for something like you and I have. We are the fortunate ones. Why were we selected for this gift? I don't know why it's happening to me, but I thank God that it does. I used to question, why? Why me? But I no longer do that. I just am grateful that it was me. But early in my AA life, I met a wonderful guy from up in Richmond, Virginia. He's dead now, and I can use his full name, Jack White. And he shared something with me at that time that perhaps you've heard many times yourself, but perhaps some of you haven't. And it kind of explains to me why you and I were selected for this way of life. And I'd like to share it with you this morning if you would permit me to. It's called Power Beyond Estimate. I don't know whether Jack wrote this. I doubt if he did. I don't think anything is original in AA. I think it's merely another indication of God's will for us. But here's the way Jack gave it to me back 16 years ago. God in His wisdom has selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of His goodness. And selecting them through whom to bring this phenomena, He went not to the proud or the mighty, the famous or the brilliant. He went to the humble, the sick, to the unfortunate. He went right to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. Well might He have said to us when He gave this gift, "Into your weak and feeble hands have I entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which has been denied the most learned of your fellows. Not the scientist, the statesman, not to wives or mothers. Not even to my priests or ministers have I given this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. And this is the part I must remember. It must be used unselfishly. It carries with it grave responsibility. No day can be too long. No demands upon your time can be too urgent. No case too pitiable. No task too hard. No effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its application to no race, no creed, and no denomination. Personal criticism you must expect. Lack of appreciation will be common. Ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. Success will not always attend your efforts and your work with other alcoholics. You must be prepared for adversity. For what men call adversity is the ladder you must use to ascend the rung towards spiritual perfection. And remember, in the exercise of this power, I shall not exact of you beyond your capabilities. You're not selected because of exceptional talents. And be always careful, if success attends your efforts, not to ascribe to personal superiority that to which you can lay no claim only by virtue of my gift. If I'd wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to the physician and to the sciences. If I had wanted eloquent men, there would have been many anxious for the assignment. For talk is the easiest used of all talents with which I have endowed mankind. If I had wanted scholarly men, the world is filled with better qualified men and women than you, and who would have been readily available. You were selected because you have been the outcast of the world. And your long experience as drunkards has made or should have made you humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you made on the day of your entrance into AA. Namely, that you are powerless. And that it was only with your willingness to turn your life and your will into my keeping that relief came to you. End quote. There are many conditions and responsibilities I have to fulfill to maintain my sobriety. I am partially aware of them, and slowly but surely becoming aware of new ones each and every day. On our first trip to the top of the mountain 7.5 years ago, there were 5 of us in the highest family. Evelyn, myself, and our 3 daughters. There were 109 more here this morning than there were at that first Mount Eagle roundup. There were 65 of us, and the Hires and Roberts represented about 20% of that number. These weekends, semi-annual weekends, has meant much to our family, and I'm sure to the Roberts family too, because their son and daughter has been part of this all along. And as our girls grew up, slowly but surely they dropped off. First there were just 2 of them. First there were 3, and then 2. Then 1, and this is the first time that Elvin and myself have been up here, just as ourselves, without any of the girls. We're entering into a new way of living that we have to become accustomed to. Not only here at the top of the mountain, but at home too. It means that we have to adapt ourselves to life in a different manner than we had in the past. But we are both so grateful that the girls had an opportunity to be a part of Mount Eagle also. Because coming to the top of the mountain was a very meaningful experience to them, and they are still in love with you. I think it was about 1 week or 10 days ago that Marion called from New York. She knew we had a little motel problem this weekend. She called and wanted to know if everything was going all right. Would we have to cancel out anybody? We were out to see Christine at college about a month ago. How's the roundup, Daddy? Who's coming? Who's going to be there? Who's going to talk? Think maybe I could slip off from Stevens College and slip up there on top of the mountain with you this weekend. I wish they could have. And then there's the last one that left us last year. She died at Orvin on the plains. Last Sunday she asked, how's Mount Eagle going? Because she loves all of you too. During my drinking, I hurt my family terribly, mentally and spiritually. I didn't want to, but I was powerless. I'm still powerless, but I have something that I can use instead of that kind of hurt that I used for so many years before getting here. Now, I've had a dream, and I'm not stealing that quote from some late Martin Luther King. I had these dreams long before he had his, I think. I'd like to share some of these dreams with you, and some of you have heard them before, but they kind of have more meaningful to me all the time. As a kid, I had one. My father was the finest man ever walked the face of this earth. And I thought if I could just be half the man he was, I'd be a good man. And then I took that first drink. And then for 25 years, I was powerless to do anything about it. I couldn't. I couldn't be any part of a man, period, because I was wrapped around the bottle. During this 25 years, Dad died. He didn't live to see me get into AA. But since I've gotten here, I've renewed that dream of being half the man he was. And I can. You told me I could. All I've got to do is stay close to you and practice the principles of AA in all of my affairs and fulfill the conditions of my sobriety. And I can be half the man that Dad was. I don't want it to happen today, no, nor tomorrow. I don't want it to happen while I'm on this earth, but maybe 3 days after I die. I hope that I will have lived the kind of life that somebody will say then, he was half as good as his daddy. I can do it with your help. I've had another dream since I got here with you. And she's sitting on the back row, so I can't embarrass her so much. But I imagine about the time that Elva and I were going to get married, she had all the dreams of any bride-to-be would have. All the dreams that you ladies had as a bride. And then we were married, and then I crashed all those dreams of hers on the rocks. I destroyed them all. I won't go into detail what I did, you can imagine. But for the first 7.5, 8 years of our married life, I did a perfect job of destroying any dream that she might have entertained. Instead of her dreaming, now I have a dream. I hope that I can stay close to you and be privileged to come back to the top of this mountain every 6 months. And in between, stay close to you in meetings wherever I might be. So that someday, not today, not tomorrow, next week, but maybe 3 days after I leave this earth, Evelyn can say he's been a good husband. And I have the tools to accomplish that with. 12 suggested steps of recovery. And I have a source of power that I can reach out and get and tap anytime I want to. And that's God as I understand him. Then my third and last dream is about these three daughters of ours. When they were born in this world, they were child of God and entitled to everything that his children are entitled to. For the first few years of their life, I had destroyed that because I was a practicing alcoholic. Since I've gotten here with you and turned my life in your hands, and I'm attempting to practice God's will, I think I've made a few amends to these three girls. At least I've made a few amends, or they are very good actresses. I don't know which. I like to think it's a man part. But I have only started. I've just scratched the surface. And my dream of them is this. Not today, not tomorrow, not next week. But maybe for a couple or 3 days after I leave this earth, each one of them can say he was a good daddy. They'll say that now. But I hope when they say it finally that it will be without any reservation. And that I will have partially completed the job of making restitution to those three that I hurt so badly. I'm sure there was a time when I thought that the restitution steps meant go out and buy a baby doll or a football or a bottle of perfume. But my sense of values has changed a little bit. And I don't think that's the kind of restitution that God had in mind when he had them put into writing the restitution steps of our program. I think the only restitution I can make that can be lasting and meaningful is merely practice these principles and all of my affairs, and fulfilling the conditions of my sobriety one day at a time. There is another, not dream, but hope, I guess. You know, I did so many bad things, that's the best word I can use, before I found you, or you found me. And I hope that when I have passed on, that maybe I will have left a world that is just a little bit better place to live because of the life I live since I've been with you. All of these dreams and hopes I can accomplish one day at a time by staying close to you and God as I understand it, by practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and fulfilling the conditions of my sobriety. Now, I've made a few references to God as I understand him. I feel pretty close to him this morning because you're here. I've learned about God, what little I know about him, through you. I think all of you feel the same way I do when we come here to the top of the mountain. We get pretty close to him. He's right here with us this morning. Some of you have heard me quote this. I toted this thing all the way out to Palm Springs last year. I was going to pass to give them the good word. And the meeting before I was going to share all this wisdom with them, some of the smart-aleck gal got up and told the whole thing out there. I was expecting this to happen this weekend. If it was, I was going home. Morning. But this expresses so much, so true, my feelings about you. And believe me, it's true. This is how I feel. This little poem is entitled, I've Never Seen God. But I know how I feel. Because it's people like you that make him so real. My God is no stranger. He's friendly and he's gay. And he doesn't ask me to weep or kneel when I pray. It seems that I pass him so often each day, and the faces of people I meet on my way. See the stars in the heaven, a smile on your face, a leaf in a tree or a rose in a vase. He's winter and he's autumn, he's summer and spring. And short, God is every real wonderful thing. I wish I might meet him more often than I do. And I know that I would if there were more people just like you. I want to thank you for 12-stepping me this weekend. I want to thank you for being just what you are. And for staying along this narrow road to life that I'm trying to travel one day at a time. I know you're there because I've seen you and I've felt you and I've heard you. I no longer am filled with fear of falling down or falling off the road, because I know you'll pick me up. And you'll go to any length to get me started back on the right road to this AA way of life. I no longer have any worries of fear or frustration. I have faith in you, and God is my understanding. And I have true AA love for you, and God is my understanding. I no longer have problems with getting along with Jim, because you have helped me find out what Jim really is. I'm an alcoholic that's powerless. Not only over alcohol, but I'm powerless over everything. I'm powerless over life. As I said before, I know from which where I can get that power I need to live one day at a time, in accordance with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and God's will. May God continue to bless each one of you. May he keep you sober. May he bring you back to Mount Eagle, top of the mountain next May. And may he keep you in his grace at all times. God bless you.